Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd. What a great show we have for you today. After a couple of amazing playoff games, last night in the NBA, the Rockets survive Oklahoma City. We got a lot to get to. I will, I'm going to teach you some ball a little bit later on the show. Plus, the Rockets postpone what we believe to be the inevitable, that upcoming. I'm going to credit Colin Cowherd. My boy Colin, where Colin was right, I thought he had an analogy for Giannis last week, which worked, and it got exposed again last night. So we'll get to the Milwaukee Bucks now, trails 2-0 to the Miami Heat. Everybody's talking about the officiating, which is good because that's somewhat of a return to normalcy. So we got that. Leonard Fournette is now a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What does that mean for the Bucks? We'll get to it. Also, the New England Patriots continue to be bad at one thing. Just one thing they're really bad at. That was proof. And how far down the decision chart is Antonio Brown? Wait till you hear what the Seattle Seahawks decided to do earlier today. All right, with that, let's get to what is the breaking story of the morning and is really, really interesting and will be used to make political comments, as it's already has been on another network, and that ain't what it's about. It's this story from Agent Wojnarowski he broke it and several people broke it, but Steve Nash, two-time MVP, Naismith Memorial Hall of Famer, is the new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Maybe most curious is that Steve Kerr, who, of course, he worked with as a basketball consultant, he played for. Remember, Steve Kerr was a general manager with no experience. A general manager of the Phoenix Suns. Steve Nash was their star player. Steve Nash even said earlier today, hey, it's kind of interesting. I didn't know he wanted a coach, but I think it's great, which is probably the most curious part about it. It's not that Steve Nash, who has no coaching experience, is hired to coach the Brooklyn Nets. It's that Steve Nash just wanted to coach because he's a guy of what I would think would be many interests. Not necessarily political aspirations, but he's definitely, if you put him in the category of woke, that would be Steve Nash. And, of course, a guy who wants to right the wrongs of society. That would be Steve Nash. Of course, he was also, for a season, a soccer analyst for Turner Sports, okay, covering European soccer. So he was a consultant. He was the general manager of the Canadian national team. He was a soccer analyst. And now he's the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. That career path is curious. What is not curious is that a guy who has a great relationship with the general manager and a good relationship with one of the star players and was a superstar player in his own right is taking over an NBA team. There is plenty of precedence for this. Doc Rivers had no experience when he took over the Magic. Isaiah Thomas took over the Pacers. Heck, Larry Bird became the Pacers head coach. He'd never had any experience. Mark Jackson, Steve Kerr, Jason Kidd. Pat Riley had barely been an assistant coach. He's really more of a broadcaster before he became head coach. There's plenty of precedent for this in the NBA. And of course, I've heard people like Stephen A. Smith pull out the race card, which Stephen A. Smith, you can take the race card and shove it where the sun doesn't shine because it just simply does not apply here. Nobody believes it applies here, except apparently for you, which is the most bothersome part about it. Right? Like, on one hand, we can all say, like, look, clearly some level of racism still exists in this country. I believe the percentage is rather small, but it's amplified by social media and the mainstream media. That said, I'd be an idiot to not at least admit that on some level racism does exist. On the other hand, pulling out the race card every time a white guy gets a job over, in your, by your estimation, a black guy, is ludicrous. Equally ludicrous is the statement that Greg Popovich is going to be the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets because his house is for sale in San Antonio. Should be pointed out that his wife died a couple years ago. It's just a possibility that a 9,000-square-foot house that has memories of the time with your wife, maybe time to move on from that house. Or maybe he might retire rather than take the Nets job. So what is it all about? Look, I want to get to the games and what we saw last night. But and you're talking to one of the biggest Jock Vaughn fans, maybe one of the only Jock Vaughn fans remaining in the national media. That's because I grew up in Southern California, and the guy, one of the guys who I emulated my game after in terms of being a local product was Jock Vaughn. He was a senior. I was a freshman. My high school team actually beat them in the CIF playoffs. We ran a 1-3-1 where we just soft double teamed him just simply to get the ball out of his hands because he was that good with the basketball. He went on to Kansas and was kind of a lifer in the NBA as a backup point guard, became an assistant coach, became a head coach with the Orlando Magic. That failed. And of course, now he's been with the Brooklyn Nets as an assistant and then the interim head coach. Basketball, like many places you work, is about relationships. The NBA is about relationships and respect. And in order to get the job with the Brooklyn Nets, you got to have a relationship with the general manager. The reason the Greg Popovich thing made sense was Sean Marks had played for Greg Popovich. Sean Marks had worked for the San Antonio Spurs. That made sense. Well, Sean Marks played with Steve Nash. They have a great relationship. Additionally, Steve Nash worked with Kevin Durant. And oh yeah, by the way, one of the most difficult men, super talented, but difficult dudes to coach in the NBA is Kyrie Irving. And just about any other coach could not look him in the eye outside maybe of a Jason Kidd and say, I've done what you're trying to do. Granted, I have not. Steve Nash has not won a championship, but he's won two MVPs. There's very few people on the face of this earth who can look Kyrie Irving in the eye and say, I've been where you want to be. I am where you'd like to get to. I'm a Hall of Famer. You can do your way and chase off coaches, or you can try and do it my way. And, oh, yeah, by the way, apparently he's still going to have Jock Vaughn as his lead assistant. And to people who say, why'd they pass over Jock Vaughn? If Jock Vaughn had a strong enough relationship with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, if he had the respect of that locker room, don't you think KD would have gotten on that plane to Orlando? Don't you think Kyrie would have gotten on that plane to Orlando? Don't you think DeAndre Jordan would get on that plane and go to Orlando? It doesn't mean that this plan will work for the Brooklyn Nets. It doesn't. There is no guarantee. And I have zero idea if Steve Nash wants to be part of the grind. Right? But if you take a breath and look and try and figure out, hey, why didn't it work for Kyrie in Boston, everyone I know says he thought that Brad Stevens was just a nerd, right? A Division III player who had all these plays and used all these analytics, and that staff he couldn't really relate to. Now you have Jacque Vaughn, who played point guard in the NBA, Steve Nash, who was a two-time MVP at point guard in the NBA. I think there's a level of respect that those men can walk into the locker room and tell guys like, hey, listen, this is how you win. Jacque Vaughn, part of a championship organization with the San Antonio Spurs. So is it a bit outside the box? Yeah. Yeah. Was I surprised by it? Sure. But not like, not blown away by it. There's a lot of it that does make sense. If you want to win in the NBA, your best players have to respect the guy standing in front of them and telling them what to do. If you don't have that, you have no chance. Zero. And Kevin Durant is coming off of a torn Achilles tendon. Now has a guy he knows, he trusts, he respects. And oh yeah, by the way, the guy just happens to have a great relationship with the general manager. Like, look, there's a lot of you who don't understand my affinity for college and why I believe that basketball players should go to college. This is a perfect example of why. Because in college, what you learn or what you foster is relationships. With your coaches, with your assistant coaches, with your teammates, but also with other people who went to your school. Those are the relationships that you're going to call upon when you need a job or when you want a job. That's how the business world works. Anyone who's been in the real business world understands this. It's not, what's the expression, what you know, but who you know. That's business 101. That's Spear School of Business, Oklahoma State University. But also, I think everybody seems to know that. But instead, we get in denial of it, and we use terms like white privilege that Stephen A. Smith used. We embarrass ourselves and not realizing that no one said a word about privilege when former black great players got a chance to coach without coaching experience. Doesn't mean it'll work. Doesn't mean it was the best hire. We also don't know who turned down the job. But I will say this. When you look at it, it makes sense. I get it. And the former point guard become coach, I just watched last night with Billy Donovan, although I'm not sure what they were doing last possession of the game. Didn't love it. Rick Pitino, former point guard. Jacque Vaughn, point guard. Jason Kidd, former point guard. I could go on and on. There is plenty of precedent for this hire. And while it comes out of left field, it mostly comes out of left field because he was doing soccer on Turner about a year and a half ago. Okay. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Steve Kerr went into the business sector, went into finance, made a bunch of money before coming back out of it, going to be the GM of the Phoenix Suns. Then he was a broadcaster. Then he was a coach. Doc Rivers, who's widely regarded as a great coach and communicator, and won a championship with the Boston Celtics, was a broadcaster, became the coach of the Magic. When he got fired, I think they were like 0-11 to start the season, went back to being a broadcaster, then took over the Boston Celtics, and then Danny Ainge pulled off one of the great coups of all time, loading him up with three superstars, and he became an NBA champion. Plenty of precedent for it. Does it work? I don't know. But if you want to make sense of it, all you have to know is that business is about relationships. The NBA is about respect. Steve Nash has a relationship with the star player, the general manager, and likely the respect of the point guard, a position that he played and played it to the tune of two MVPs and a Hall of Fame career.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I found this to be fascinating. The Houston Rockets won last night, and James Harden really struggled shooting the basketball. And look, we can't make this statement about him and not make the statement about everybody. It was messy down the stretch. Russell Westbrook missed three layups. That could have iced the game. As great as Chris Paul has been, and as much as he played, like in the fourth quarter, they did take James Harden out and then took Russell Westbrook out, so they had a little bit of rest, whereas Chris Paul played the entire way trying to finish that thing. He wanted it bad. And he turned the ball over once late. That wasn't good. He missed a drive late. That wasn't good. Even the final possession where Lou Dort got his shot blocked, believe it or not, by James Harden. You're like, what? Like, what? Yeah, believe it or not, it was Chris Paul kind of screwed it up. There was no real play. They were running just kind of a spread, get the ball to him at the top of the key, and let's just go. But with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander open in the corner, he dribbled like two dribbles too many, and Russell Westbrook got his hands on the basketball. It kind of screwed up the entire, I don't know, you'd call it a play, but just offensive possession, if you will. He wasn't good. As great as Chris Paul was in the series, and if you listened to the show yesterday, you're like, man, there is no bigger Chris Paul fan than Gottlieb. He wasn't great down the stretch. But still, James Harden was James Harden-esque in a big game for the most part offensively. Didn't do much of anything. But the Rockets did find a way. Like, they found a way to win a game. Here's James Harden after the game.
Offensively, I played like excuse my language, but I couldn't make a shot.
Yeah, he couldn't make a shot. But he did block the big shot. Now, look, part of it is Lou Dort, who's a French-Canadian kid from Montreal. He played a year also at Arizona State like James Harden. They left him open all night. He hit 10 of his first 20. Like, they were just – like, that was one of those open for a reason. And because he had all night to line up shots, I think he didn't realize had he pumped, shot faked and driven to the baseline, Steven Adams would have cleared the way, would have had a wide-open dunk to win the game, or actually to tie the game. But instead of getting into the nuances of Oklahoma City not running a play, Russell Westbrook missing layups, James Harden admitting that he played like crap but getting a big block shot, like, look, they just delayed the inevitable. I mean, the Lakers had an extra break in the middle of their series against the Portland Trail Blazers, where when they came out of it, LeBron looked amazing. Anthony Davis looked amazing. Then they essentially get an extra week off, right? Because this thing could have been done in game six. That's 3 days ago. And they would have played game one last night. Instead, the Lakers had that game off, last night off, tonight off, and they'll play tomorrow night. Houston, which is not a deep team. James Harden, who's struggled with his conditioning. It's a bad matchup against the Lakers. And I get it. Like, James Harden's from L.A. Russell Westbrook's from L.A. You know, real L.A. guys playing against guys who parachute into L.A. and saying they're now L.A. guys. Understood. But all of that energy and momentum, that doesn't help you win a basketball game. You know it does? When it's a good matchup and when you're in good physical condition, you're not beaten up by a seven-game series, which the last two games came absolutely down to the wire, and you're exhausted. Right? Fatigue makes cowards of us all. That's Vince Lombardi. It also makes mortals of immortals. These guys are immortals, and they looked very much like you and me at the end of a men's league game or at the end of playing a Saturday of pickup because they were just out of gas. Now imagine, hey, you got a night off. Now you got to play LeBron and Anthony Davis. Good luck with that. And those flaws that were exposed, Westbrook's inability to shoot or finish at the rim, James Harden disappearing at the end of games, like, those don't go away. And the more tired you are, the more they become more obvious. And there's some limitations to the team. I feel like, had they lost last night, Mike D'Antoni would have been fired. Had they lost last night, Daryl Morey might have been fired. Had they lost last night and the way in which James Harden played last night and the way in which, frankly, he played in the fourth quarter of Game 6, you have to at least offer up the possibility of moving James Harden. That may sound sacrilege. Like, wait, why would you move on? Guys, an MVP should have been a multi-time MVP. He's a super talented player. But if the object is to win and how many times can we get to winning time and that guy doesn't help you win, like, what more do you need to see? As Chris Paul said, some guys are not built for this. I think we're going to have the same conversations in like a week and a half whenever this thing is done. Just postponing the inevitable.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. So I'm watching James Harden and Russell Westbrook take on their former team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, last night. And it dawned on me. I know there are, Sam Presti is going to go down as the, instead of the GM that drafted Kevin Durant, drafted James Harden, drafted Russell Westbrook, instead of, and Serge Ibaka, by the way, instead of going down as that GM, he's going to go down as the GM who lost Kevin Durant to free agency, traded away James Harden before he became an MVP, and then traded away Russell Westbrook, who is an MVP as well. And, of course, Serge Ibaka wins a title with Toronto. Now, look, I could get into the basketball nuance of they go to the NBA Finals, and much like you've seen James Harden at the end of these games, James Harden was almost unplayable in those games. Granted, he was very early in his career, before the beard, right? But the stories go that, like, they were playing Miami, and everybody was focused on Russell Westbrook, who has proven to be a flawed player, a tremendous talent, but a flawed player, and that, of course, has been exposed throughout time. But what people weren't talking about was James Harden was awful, awful, and he wouldn't stop going out. Just because you're playing the Heat doesn't mean you got to go out in South Beach during the NBA Finals. And, oh yeah, by the way, they had to decide, do we give the money to Serge Ibaka or do we give the money to James Harden? They tried to balance it out and stay below the luxury tax, but why'd they need Serge Ibaka and another big guy? Because back then, the NBA was different. The Lakers had Andrew Bynum and Pau Gasol. You needed two big guys to beat the Lakers. Same thing to beat the Spurs. Okay, they were playing with two big guys. In order to win an NBA championship, those are the teams you had to go through. This is before small ball. But regardless of which, the truth is that Oklahoma City can't sign quality free agents. They just don't want to play there. There's nothing against the city. I love Oklahoma City, man. It's like great. I've lived there. I still done radio there. I love it. I could live there. And I think most NBA stars that play there are like, man, cost of living is great. Quality life's good. Can buy a big old house. Can play golf whenever I want. People treat me like a god, but they don't want, the stars don't want to sign there. They just don't. And think about this. Considering all the guys they trade away, they took on Chris Paul, a contract that people think they want to get rid of. You know, they've put together draft picks, like they're still really competitive. And oh yeah, by the way, they have Chris Paul for two more years. They got several first-round picks coming out of that one. And, oh, yeah, but like, Lu Dort's not going to become a worse shooter. Darius Bazley's not going to become a worse shooter over time. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I'm a little hesitant to think he's going to be a star after watching him. I think he's for his position and how people view him, I think he's a below-average passer. Not for a regular basketball player, but to be a lead guard. Like, there's just too many fast breaks where they didn't get a layup. Where in a two-on-one with an NBA point guard, that's a layup every time. His inbound decision-making, like, he's young. There are things he will improve on. There's a lack of creativity as a passer, which you can't create. But nonetheless, a good player. And they're going to be in good cap shape. And they're going to have a lot of draft picks. And considering they're in Oklahoma City and so many other teams have struggled to maintain a level of success, they're actually doing a hell of a job.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Okay, there were kind of signs of hope. Now there's a new report out that maybe there's not signs of hope. Meanwhile, Big 12, ACC, and the SEC are going to play college football. When you watch Fox cover college football and the Big 12, you're going to hear Gus Johnson, awesome, and Joel Klatt, awesome. Our number one team, Jenny Taft, on the sidelines, of course. Joel Klatt joins us here in The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. First, Joel, like, let's just get with the teams that are playing. What's college football going to look like? You're going to be in, is it in Fort Worth this year or in Waco this year? TCU, SMU to start the year. Is it Baylor, SMU to start the year? Which one was it?
Yeah, so TCU and SMU play Friday night next week. We will not do that game, but we've got Louisiana Tech Baylor on Saturday. So I'll be down in Waco. And, man, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just hoping that we can get to that point. You know, lots of Zooms and protocols and everything going on this week. And I've got to tell you, I'm growing optimistic that it's actually going to happen and that Gus and I will be down there calling the game. You know, what it's going to look like, I'm not sure. I don't think any of us really know. But Doug, I do have to tell you that I think the game, you know, the Austin Peay Central Arkansas game was pivotal and important, and in large part because I think it proved that even with limited resources, both teams having to travel, that it can happen, right? And so I think that it gave a boost to the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, that they can do it. And not only they can do it, but they can do it safely. I think you saw that Central Arc had no positive tests, and so they're going to be playing again this week. So I'm optimistic. As far as what it's going to look like, let me just tell you this. This is going to be the most difficult SEC internal schedule that we've ever seen, ever. So pin Clemson into a potential college football playoff if we get there. Maybe and most likely Notre Dame as well, just because I think that we're going to have two losses per SEC team because of the gauntlet that they're going to go through.
Okay. Fascinating, because obviously Clemson would only have to play, what, Notre Dame? Notre Dame and Clemson both in the ACC this year, which is just fascinating. What about the status of the Big Ten? It was over, then there were protests, then it was like, let's do a vote. No, still over. Then all of a sudden there was hope. There's a call between the president of the United States and the commissioner of the Big Ten. The president says at the one-yard line, and now maybe it's the wrong one-yard. There's 2 one-yard lines. And now there's a report out of Penn State that Penn State's director of athletic medicine, a man named Wayne Sabastianini, excuse me if I mispronounce his name.
Better you than me.
Okay. Sebastianelli. There we go. Sebastianelli. Wayne Sebastianelli says, when we looked at our COVID positive athletes, whether they were symptomatic or not, 30 to roughly 35% of their heart muscles were inflamed. Does this shut down any possibility of the Big Ten playing football?
Yeah. I don't know, because we've had, you know, I think a lot of, to be honest, differing opinions on this. You know, he's referring to kind of the myocarditis issue and the inflammation of the heart muscles, which I think is important to note is not new, right? You know, Doug, this is not something that has popped up because of COVID. This is something that happens on a regular basis due to any number of viruses that you can get, including the flu. So I think what's interesting for me, having been an athlete, and I'm sure you as well, is that this is the first time that we've really focused and done a battery of heart testing after a virus. So now the protocol is if you get a positive COVID test, all these schools are then putting you through a battery of heart tests, EKG, cardio MRI, so on and so forth. And so these things are now popping up. Now, it is treatable. It has been around a long time, but I don't want to minimize it, because it's certainly something that they targeted as a reason to shut things down 3.5 weeks ago when we were talking about all this stuff. I don't know what it means, to be quite honest with you. I do know that it's much safer now. They're in a better spot now with the battery of testing post a positive COVID test than in previous years and decades when this was not something that went on, and you would just basically need luck to figure out a diagnosis of myocarditis. So it's certainly interesting. I think that it's the one thing that the Big Ten certainly hung their hat on. Mm-hmm. The other part of their issue 3.5 weeks ago was the point of care rapid results tests were not necessarily available. Maybe they're becoming more available, which then makes it easier to diagnose the after effects, if you will, of the positive test. I'm not sure. I do know that there's a lot of people working really hard to try to make this season happen as soon as possible. But I don't know what this vote is going to turn out to be here later this week.
Well, it's fascinating. You and I are lockstep in the, and part of it is we cover it, and part of it is we played it, is that we know that athletes get way better everything when you're on a college campus. And so it, like, you're better off being around your team. Also, in terms of like going out to parties, whatever, like, look, there's no pressure of doing the right thing if you're not under the watchful eye of your coach and your teammates. You are if you have a season, right? Like, you don't want to cancel, hurt our season, do you? And look, the myocarditis thing is scary, but again, you're not going to know you have it unless you're playing sports and they're testing you for it. And if you test where you have it, they shut you down, right? Like, I don't think it's as hard as we're making it out to be, but I wonder, when are we past the point of no return with the Big Ten? That's my big question. Are we past that point to where you're like, look, it's all just political palaver. This is not going to happen. They're just going through the motions.
Well, let me tell you this. I fully expect a Big Ten season to happen at some point, whether that's, you know, later in the spring, or Jan 1, or December, or November. I fully expect, because as was, I thought it was so much different than the Pac-12, in that the Pac-12 kind of punted, gave their reasons, and then, you know, went back and faded off into the background. The Big Ten punted, did not give the transparency, but immediately set up their return to play, you know, panel, commission, if you want to call it that. And there was an optimism that it was very, very much a postponement rather than a cancellation. So I still believe that we'll see Big Ten games at some point. I don't know what that looks like. I really don't. But I do think that we're going to play at, you know, to some degree. And as in particular, as the point of care rapid results tests become more available, there was one from Rutgers that a lot of the coaches within the Big Ten pointed to, at least to me privately, and said, listen, we can do this right now. Lots of the coaches are lockstep. ADs are lockstep. They want to get this done as quickly as possible. But it's important to note that they're not the ones at the table making those votes and raising their hands yes or no. If I was a betting man, I would say that we see Big Ten football before the start of the year. Jan 1. I think that we're going to see something materialize before that point.
Joel Klatt is our guest here on Fox Sports Radio, of course, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. You talked about Clemson. You talked about Notre Dame. Talked about the gauntlet of the SEC. The conference you're going to cover is the Big 12, and it's an interesting year. Another year, another new quarterback for Oklahoma. And then there's Oklahoma State that now has its own reality show. They've had their own weird off season with Mike Gundy and the t-shirt. And then of course there's Texas, who returns their starting quarterback, and people thought they were back last year. They're like, no, not back last year. Then there's Texas this year. Give me your sense of the Big 12, as we haven't seen spring football, so we don't really know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, when you've won the league five straight years, I think it's hard to look other places, right? I mean, Oklahoma is recruited at a high level. You got a great coach. It has not mattered whether they have a new quarterback or not. Spencer Rattler, who was named the starter this week, is eminently capable. He's a heck of a player, very talented, and I think he fits Lincoln Riley very well. It should be noted also that Lincoln Riley fits his quarterback about as well or anybody better than anybody in the country, meaning that he will tweak his offensive system in order to showcase the ability of his quarterback. Just think about the last three seasons. Baker's offense looked a little bit different than Kyler's offense, which looked drastically different than Jalen Hurts' offense, in order to showcase the ability of the quarterback. And I think we can expect the same out of Spencer Rattler. What that looks like, not quite sure yet. Can't wait to see them play next week. We'll be there, Gus and I, for the Kansas State game later in the month. So it's hard to look other places. I will say this. You brought up two teams that I'm very high on, Texas and Oklahoma State. Because of their returning rosters, specifically they've got their quarterbacks back, you know, Hubbard is an unbelievable player. I think he's the best running back in the country. Yep. I think Texas is probably more back this year, or should be more back this year than last, because they have so many more returning players. And in particular, Doug, on the defensive side, where they were decimated by injuries last year, So not only do they have returning starters, but they have returning depth because all of those kids had to play way too early last year. They've got their quarterback back. And then a huge note, I think that this is very important. They've got really good coordinators. Tom Herman brought in Chris Ash, who is the head coach, remember formerly at Rutgers.
But he's at Ohio State before that, right?
Coordinator at Ohio State when they both won the national championship together. And then he also brought in Mike Yurcich, who was really good at Oklahoma State, went last year to Ohio State and was the quarterback coach for Justin Field under Ryan Day, and now he's going to come down there and be the quarterback coach slash offensive coordinator for Texas. Two really, really good hires. So I'm high on Texas. I think Oklahoma State could have a great year, but you got to beat the best in order to be the best, and that certainly is still Oklahoma.
Jamie Newman was a transfer from Wake Forest, right? And he was set to he was competing for the starting spot at Georgia. JT Daniels, who I know you covered at USC, right? Modern day kid, didn't play his senior year in high school, instead went straight to SC. Then he hurt his knee. Slovis was a better quarterback than him. He transfers to Georgia. They're competing for a starting spot with UGA. And then yesterday, Jamie Newman opts out of playing because of COVID concerns. Is that why he opted out? Did he get beat out? Like, why? I don't really understand. Why would you transfer to Georgia and then you're going to get an opportunity to play for Georgia and not want to play for Georgia?
Yeah, I think that it's fascinating. I don't want to speculate because you don't know what his family situation. He may have somebody in his family that has severe comorbidities right now that we don't know about. And I think then precautions are necessary.
But you don't home. But if you're in campus, you're not going home, right? Like that's part of the thing
I totally understand.
Like it doesn't make any sense.
The benefit of the doubt. I'm really trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, in particular for a guy who at best would be a middle round draft pick. And he's just seen three guys in subsequent years, three straight years, go from preseason middle round draft picks to the number one pick in the draft at the quarterback position. Baker Mayfield was not thought of as a first rounder. Then he went number one. Kyler Murray the same. Certainly Joe Burrow the same at LSU. And now he's got the opportunity where he has to play in order to increase his value for the rest of his life. And he opts out. It looks strange. I will tell you that if you were just basing it off what I've seen of the two guys on film, if JT Daniels is healthy, he's a tantalizing talent, the way that he throws the football. And in particular, in an offense that isn't quite, I would say, how do I put this?
Can I help you? Let me help you. Jake Fromm has no arm, right? He does not have an NFL arm. He was a tremendous college quarterback with a very limited arm. JT Daniels also doesn't have a big-time arm and is probably a better thrower than Jake Fromm, right? So he wouldn't succeed if you're trying to throw the ball deep down the field, but in the context of Georgia's offense, he actually works quite nicely.
I think he does, and we'll see how that offense is supposed to change a little bit, but we'll see how it changes. I would be speculating on why he decided to opt out, speaking of Newman. I really would. I was shocked. When I saw that, I was absolutely floored.
Can't wait to hear you and Gus call games, man. I'm excited for you, although I just wish it was the full slate. I wish it was the Big Ten as well. We'll wait and see what happens. In the meantime, thanks so much for joining us, and I guess the golf days are over for now.
Yeah, exactly. The clubs are going into storage, but that's a positive development. I can't wait to go call games, man. I don't know what this season is going to bring, what it's going to look like, but let's hope that we get as many games as we possibly can for these kids' sake who just want to go out there and play football.
How excited is Gus about calling the Rattler? Rattler as a last name, right? Like that is a.
Oh, can you imagine? I mean, I can't imagine what he's going to give us as far as nicknames. I mean, I don't know if you can top Hollywood Brown, but I'm sure he'll try.
He will succeed because he's Gus. Great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us.